KALW.
It's a drying lake. It's becoming ecologically unstable. It's more of an environmental exposure hazard.
What happens when the biggest lake in California is starved of water?
The accelerating ecological crisis is really there for people to see.
A threat to public health grows as the water levels drop.
A receding sea worsens air quality. That is a major public health crisis in Imperial and Riverside counties to tens of thousands of Californians and, of course, Americans.
And an Oakland author and artist reads from his book about birds. Today, a story from the podcast Living Downstream, a trip to the Salton Sea, a story from the podcast Living Downstream, and more. A special edition of Cross Currents coming up. I'm Hannah Baba. Today, we're bringing you an episode of Living Downstream, a new podcast from Northern California Public Media. The podcast looks at environmental justice issues around the world, and a couple of episodes take place right here in California. Last week, we brought you an episode about air pollution in West Oakland, and this time, we're going to the biggest lake in California. Here's their guest host, Molly Peterson.
From Northern California Public Media and Mensch Media, this is Living Downstream, the environmental justice podcast. I'm guest host Molly Peterson. This time, from the Coachella Valley east of Los Angeles, we're talking about the biggest lake in California, now starved of water, and the people who live around the sea next door. The Salton Sea sits in a depression of land 30 miles from the Mexican border, and it poses a growing threat to public health. In this episode, two young women from the eastern Coachella Valley introduce us to their neighbor. We begin with Adriana Torres, who lives in a rural community there, an area called North Shore.
A few years before I was born, this shoreline, we call it a playa, it was covered with fish. Almost 8 million of them. Tilapias. They were dead. A lack of oxygen and a lot of algae killed them. None of this is supposed to be here. Not the fish. Their bones are under my feet, mixed in with a lot of barnacle. Tiny, round shells like beads. They're a sign that the food chain is failing. It's surprising, but birds still come to the sea. Even though thousands of brown and white pelicans died here from eating bad fish, this is a stop for birds on the Pacific Flyway, a migration route, and climate change is stealing bird habitat at other stops on the way. The water, that was an accident too. Farmers came to settle this hot and dusty land, so they built canals to divert and control the Colorado River. More than a century ago, one canal broke open. The place it flooded hadn't been a lake in hundreds of years. None of us should be here. Not the fish, or the birds, or the people. But we are. Now, the sea is shrinking. Over time, officials have promised to do things to restore it and protect us, including California's current Natural Resources Secretary, Wade Crowfoot.
A receding sea worsens air quality. That is a major public health crisis in Imperial and Riverside counties to tens of thousands of Californians and, of course, Americans.
Fixing the sea is California's responsibility. States said so the year I was born. Since then, they've spent millions of dollars on studies and meetings and reports. But the Salton Sea has been drying up faster, and the climate is changing, and there's still no plan to finish the work.
Oh, but you have to put the seats in before you fill it up all the way through.
My name is Rosa Gonzalez. Adriana and I just graduated from high school together. I live in Thermal. We don't even have a mayor. It's a small community a few minutes from the Salton Sea. But until a couple of months ago, I really hadn't seen the sea up close. Here on the West Shore, it's gross. There's trash, old bottles, a nasty, muddy piece of carpet. It smells rotten. Rotten eggs, rotten fish. And it's hot. It's going to be 112 degrees today. A couple of volunteer scientists and a teacher from our old high school, Desert Mirage, they're pumping up a small pontoon boat. They're here to help start a science program that local people can take part in. The idea is to monitor water quality in the Salton Sea.
Is this your first time on a boat?
Yeah, and on this close to the water.
That's awesome!
Yeah.
That's Isabel Arseno Soltero. She's an oceanographer at UC Irvine. She's here with Quint Montgomery, an oceanographer at Scripps. They're working for free. To go out with them, I put on blue waders so I can splash into the boat. People here know the sea is dirty. Arseno Soltero says it's really unique.
It's almost twice as salty as the ocean. Actually, it's more than twice as salty as the ocean in a lot of parts.
Also, the water has been starved of oxygen.
So unfortunately, a lot of biology dies around here, and it's quickly receding due to the different water policies that have been implemented.
State and federal scientists monitor water quality out here, but not frequently, and their data reports are hard to find. These scientists and a group called Alianza Coachella Valley want to do more and share more about water quality with the community.
Yeah, I'm going to push. I'm going to get in right now.
So we are preparing to leave right now.
3 hours.
So as he is rowing us into the sea, I can see the kind of dark brown, kind of yellow water.
It's kind of reddish.
As we started to paddle out, I remembered when I was 6. My dad once told me and my siblings that we were going to a beautiful beach. We were so excited. We packed things up. In the car, he kept talking about it, how beautiful it was. He stopped the car and we ran out. We saw dead fish. It smelled gross. My dad was just laughing at us. My mom scolded him. We eventually went to a beach in LA, but I never came back here.
I heard it.
Out on the water, it's a different view.
You know which way.
Keep your business, baby. It's super shallow right here. We can still touch the bottom.
For one thing, the sea is about 35 miles long. It takes almost half an hour to get to the first sampling site by the mouth of a river.
We can use the salinity as a marker for where the river is coming out.
Even in the middle, the sea is shallow. Arseno Soltero uses a monitoring tool called a sonde. It looks like a flashlight. It tracks time, location, the oxygen levels, how cloudy the water is, and how salty.
So salinity here is 54, so it is fresher. We have gotten into the river plume.
For most of a century, four rivers have kept this area wet. Their water arrives less salty than the sea, but also polluted.
River water tends to have other pesticides in it that are feeding into the Salton Sea. So we can say that if the salinity tells us that we're getting into the area that is influenced by the river water, then maybe that area has also other pesticides and nutrients.
The scientists are training at least 10 community members to come on sampling trips just like this. The group Alianza will pay them each time.
I guess what we're trying to help them is just to get information, because essentially what we want is for the community to have their own measurements and have their own tools to advocate for themselves in terms of environmental policies.
My dad, he still thinks the Salton Sea is a nasty place. But on the water, I started to think of the sea more like someone I know. Like a sick family member no one remembers or cares to bother with. If the sea is sick, one place to examine it is at the mouth of the brown, smelly New River. It runs under a highway at the south end. Drying the sea up is happening on purpose. California water users took more than their share from the Colorado River for a long time. So the year I was born, the state had to settle a fight with other Western states about that. It meant less water for crops and less farm runoff going into this river that feeds the sea. Pesticides are still in here, from Mexico and the US. Some of them are illegal now, like the termite killer Aldrin and DDT. That's what another scientist tells me.
My name is Ryan Sinclair. I'm an environmental microbiologist, and I work at the Loma Linda University School of Public Health.
For one of his projects, Ryan Sinclair used a balloon to raise a camera up above the playa to help show how fast it's growing. By one estimate, the sea could lose 3/4 of its volume within a decade. Within 25 years, there could be 100,000 acres of exposed playa. Authorities said to avoid the sea this year because of the algae blooms that could harm people and animals. Sinclair points out an agricultural ditch that could harm people too.
The concern is that the pesticides will be emissive because they're in the sediment, which would be this stuff here.
Toxic chemicals are in the water and the mud drying out.
There's no way out for all of this. We know that those are still there, but we don't know if they're going to be attached to the dust and they're going to be blowing up into the wind and then coming out to where people are living and breathing.
State pesticide regulators check water quality at 2 rivers that go into the sea a couple times a year. But this isn't drinking water, so they don't study human health impacts. No state agency understands what happens to the pollution as the sea dries up.
Everything's an uncertainty right now. I don't think anybody's been able to quantify anything about any of this.
So people want to do some science themselves, just like the community already does for air quality. A group called Comité Cívico del Valle put in 40 of its own air monitors to supplement the few the state has here. For this water monitoring, way more people signed up than Alianza can train. The budget for this whole project is tiny, a few $1,000s. So far, the state of California has authorized more than $700 million for restoration projects at the Salton Sea.
That Salton Sea is a pretty big challenge.
In 2014, Governor Jerry Brown said fixing the sea could be quite expensive.
I've heard numbers into the billions, so it's important. I'd certainly like to find a way to do better by the Salton Sea than we've been doing.
But none of the money spent so far has gone to study the questions people ask the most about health risks. What's in the dust that's getting exposed on the playa? And who's going to be affected by it?
So all of those districts are involved. The water district, the regional water board, the pesticide, and the air quality districts.
Researcher and microbiologist Ryan Sinclair.
They just don't take responsibility to, you know, solve this complicated problem. And so that's the main issue the community has.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Today, we're featuring the environmental justice podcast Living Downstream from Northern California Public Media. This episode is about how the biggest lake in California is now starved of water. Here's reporter Rosa Gonzalez.
Other airborne pollution blows into the Coachella Valley too, so it's hard to know how much to blame on the sea. There's smog from bigger cities nearby, emission from cars, from trains and trucks that move cargo, power plants and factories. Near where I live, there's burning on agricultural fields and particles of dust from the desert. Still, UC Riverside scientists who collected dust estimated that about 10% of their samples come from the playa, and there's more playa at the sea every day. Pollution already causes many diseases of the lungs and heart. It makes people sick, including my classmate Adriana's mother.
My mom's name is Silvia Torreseja. She has lived near the Salton Sea since she was around 17.
Empecé a sentir esos problemas como a los 17 años. Pero de primero no le tomé mucha importancia porque comenzaron nomás como alergias al aire, a la tierra.
Within a year, she started to have trouble breathing. At first, she didn't think much of it. It felt like allergies to the air or dirt, but the symptoms got worse. She discovered she was asthmatic. She couldn't run fast. She couldn't be outside. Now she controls her asthma with medication. It's worse in the spring, and she says it's aggravated when the wind shifts and comes from the sea towards our house in North Shore.
Pues un ataque de asma. En veces lo comienza uno a sentir en veces como en la garganta, pero de todas maneras comienza uno a sentirse desesperado, desesperado, que empieza uno a...
When an attack starts, she feels it in her throat, and she begins to feel desperate for air. And sometimes she's sweating and feels like she can't get enough air.
Tienes que correr inmediatamente a un doctor, porque pues si no, ahí queda uno.
It feels like you have to immediately run to the doctor, she says. Because if not, there's no one who can help. My mom went to the emergency room a few times for this. But the people who can't afford doctors or American healthcare, they're not even counted in public health statistics.
The accelerating ecological crisis is really there for people to see. The ongoing community health crisis has been going on for quite a while. And so it's not as obvious to people.
Dr. David Lowe is an immunologist and a dean at the UC Riverside School of Medicine. In Imperial County, at the south end of the sea, one in every five people has been diagnosed with asthma. But in Riverside County and North Shore, we've only got estimates.
We just don't have the detailed information on who is sick, where they are living, what they're exposed to, and what kind of sick they are, right? So we need that information because we have not made that investment.
Around the sea, Lowe says the rate of children who go to the emergency room or stay in the hospital for asthma is twice as high as the rest of the state. And just like the people who live here, he suspects more people may have health problems than we even actually know.
No!
Oh, you're back.
My neighbor is a woman named Cochita Posar. She's a mother and an advocate from the indigenous Purapecha community of Michoacán, Mexico. Sometimes neighbors will drive her around North Shore with a megaphone to let people know in their own language when there's something important to pay attention to. Her house is the place people gather to talk about their health and their children. She says that's how the community has noticed patterns among the problems.
For example, say you have a family with three children. One child may have asthma, one child may have allergies, one child may have allergies in the eyes or nosebleeds. Every child may be having problems based on their immune system.
Conchita has tried to talk to local and state air officials, but nothing requires these regulators to take her seriously. And she says they continue to dismiss her concerns.
Nosotros dimos testimonios de lo que los niños tenían.
We gave testimonies that the children had nosebleeds, asthma, allergies, but they said no, that they needed proof.
So the rate of respiratory illness is not well tracked. The nearest hospital to my house in North Shore is in a city, 35 minutes away. The thing is, people go to doctors in two different counties and two countries. Sometimes when they get sick, people go to Mexico. And sometimes traveling there can make them even sicker. Once, when my mom did drive all the way to Mexicali, they got mad at her. They scolded her in the hospital. They said she could have died on the way.
¿Cómo era posible que me había ido tan lejos y hasta en el camino me podía morir? Pero pues ya, ni modo. Le dije, pues ya que ya había llegado allá.
But the doctors in Mexicali helped. She got medicine, and they showed her how to handle attacks with a nebulizer at home. My neighbor Conchita says doctors in Mexico are better.
Lamentablemente, si los llevamos a una cita médica aquí en nuestras clínicas o en nuestros hospitales.
Unfortunately, if we take them to a medical appointment here in the United States, in our clinics or hospitals, they don't give us medicine. They tell us that it's an allergy, that it's going to pass, and our children continue to get worse. But if you take them to a doctor in Mexicali, they will give us treatment that helps the children much better, and they can be a little more, I would say, in better condition with this dust that's affecting us all.
The issues we're talking about might affect more than 100,000 people who live right near the sea,
David Lowe at UC Riverside runs a Center for Health Disparities Research. He says that the symptoms we describe offer clues that the problem is specific to the sea.
It's a drying lake. It's becoming ecologically unstable. It's more of an environmental exposure hazard.
And because that's the case, he says it's worth seeing the sea differently. In ancient times, people blamed a poisonous vapor for diseases, like plague. Lowe says this was called a miasma, and he says that it is one way to think about the Salton Sea. But really, the Salton Sea is a system, an ecosystem. The sea and the dust and the algae and the fish and the birds and the people together.
The communities can really direct us to where the real research questions are. We think that this drying Salton Sea and the dynamic degradation of the ecology in the sea and its secondary effects on the aerosols and that association with pulmonary health is something that really needs to be studied.
That was an excerpt from the podcast Living Downstream from Northern California Public Media. That episode was reported by Molly Peterson and Olivia Rodriguez-Mendez with narration from Rosa Gonzalez and Adriana Torres. You can find a link to the whole episode and more stories from Living Downstream at KELW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we're going to hear from an Oakland author and artist in another episode of KELW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Alex Harris lives in Oakland. His book, Birds of Lake Merritt, came out in August.
It's about the birds that live at Lake Merritt in Oakland, and the lake's history as the first wildlife refuge in the nation. Here's the beginning of the description of a type of duck that spends the winter at the lake, the common goldeneye. In her book, A Wizard of Earthsea, East Bay native Ursula K. Le Guin writes, "A mage can control only what is near him, what he can name exactly and wholly." While knowing the name of the common goldeneye will not necessarily make you a mage or give you control over these migratory medium-sized diving ducks, there is still something of a thrill to be had in being able to identify and differentiate between the three types of goldeneye, two of which are ducks and one of which is a James Bond movie. Fun fact, the creator of James Bond, Ian Fleming, was an avid birder and named his protagonist after an American ornithologist.
That was Alex Harris reading from Birds of Lake Merritt.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can find more at KELW.org/New Arrivals. Cross Currents will be off tomorrow for the SFUSD board meeting, but tune in Wednesday at 5. Bay Area schools have money this year to give all students 2 free meals a day, but that means school chefs are feeding a lot more kids than before the pandemic.
I thought it was going to be a hot mess, like eating in the classroom with tiny humans. We're going to have food everywhere. The tables are going to be a mess.
We check in with school chefs and students Wednesday at 5.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Elizabeth Aranda, James Rollins, Gabe Graben, Victor Tense,